The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho, the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And today, JL Sonnen sounds off as he returns to Talk is Jericho to talk Brock Lesnar in the WWE, Ronda Rousey in the WWE, Conor McGregor, CM Punk, or Phil Brooks as he's known in the MMA world. He's got some details about Phil's second fight coming up later this year, how he likely got a second chance, and where it's going to happen. JL's also talking about his own return to the Octagon, what brought him back, and what his training regimen is like now that he's over 40. He's also a huge pro wrestling fan, as we know. He's got some thoughts about Braun Strowman's Fastlane match and what might happen with him at WrestleMania. We talk promoters, Dana White in the UFC, Vince McMahon in the WWE, and why he might be the best promoter of all time. Chael's even got some interesting opinions about what Donald Trump has taken from the pro wrestling world. So great conversation with JL Sonnen, recorded at his podcast studio in Portland, Oregon, when I was there last week with Fozzy, and it started right now on Talk is Jericho. Crank it up, man.
You sound better. I prefer you on here.
See, but I can't hear you.
Oh, yeah, mine is actually off. I don't hear myself
either.
I'm just
hearing me.
Is that me? 1, 2... 1, 2, 1, 2. You got the control?
So you got reverb.
Yeah, oh. Something happened. Wait a minute. I'm turning up. No, I'm not kicking through.
I can hear my...
I hear him. I don't hear me. No.
I hear me and I don't hear him.
but it is picking up here at least. I'm going to wear him just as a clutch. I felt weird without him. Yeah.
I can't hear you as much without mine though.
Yeah.
All right. So now that we're headphoneless, one guy has headphones and one guy doesn't.
Yeah,
which is kind of interesting, but it's fine.
Recording.
It's of course we're recording. That's why I just said it. You're now on the podcast.
This is how you start.
This is all how
right.
I start.
Cool.
We just get rolling. There's no big intro. Just get into it. JL Sonnen is here in Portland, and actually, you're the one who set this up because I don't know. For me, when I do my podcast, I carry all my audio stuff in a white pillowcase. I don't know why. It's just the way I've done it from the start, and I left it in a hotel room in Vegas. So they're sending it to the venue here in Portland tomorrow, but I forgot about that. So when I was driving up here, I was like, hey, dude, you want to do a podcast? You're like, sure. And then I was like, oh, my God, I don't even have my stuff. So you came through, and we got this palatial studio here.
And it turns out you had an honest hotel staff that didn't go down to the local Hawk Mart and get rid of your equipment.
The secret was, though, I have a friend of mine who lives in Vegas, so I got him on it because I realized that like about an hour on the plane, dude, you got to go down there and get it. So when you actually have someone on the field that can go grab it, that eliminated a lot of the middleman stuff.
And what are you doing on the road right now? You're with Fozzy exclusively?
Fozzy tour, yeah.
Okay, you don't have to make towns for wrestling.
No, I'm not doing WWE stuff right now. So,
are you going to be annoyed when I mark out? You know how much I love wrestling.
Here's the thing. There's no game plan, Chael. We can do whatever we want, which is the cool thing.
Can we talk Braun Strowman?
Let's talk about it, sure.
He's the tag team champion.
Is that what's going to happen? Because I saw that he won some kind of a match where he's going to face the tag team champions at WrestleMania.
My understanding is he is officially the champion, no? I thought
no,
he won
no,
the belt.
No.
Okay.
He won the right to face the champions at WrestleMania.
Okay.
Right? Because that's the big thing right now. This time of year, everybody's kind of figuring out what their WrestleMania angles are going to be. And I think they were keeping Strowman in reserve in case there was any issues with, have you heard about this big thing with Roman Reigns and then the steroid accusations? And then, of course, with Brock, is he staying? Is he going? Is it a work? We don't know. And it seemed that Braun was kind of the third wheel
just in case those other two guys, one of them flaked out. But it seems like that's going to happen now.
What is the deal with that? Some dude was peddling illegal stuff but secretly making a documentary on the side?
I don't know, man. I don't really know much about the whole thing. I just know that from time to time you'll see these guys come out of the woodwork of the accusations and all that sort of thing. I mean, Do you ever have anything like that in UFC? Because you guys are getting busted all the time there.
Yeah, maybe not like a ring like that, no. Yeah. I mean, if I understand right, and I only read an article, but I mean, it made big news. It was all the way up to TMZ. They usually vet their stuff pretty good. But,
sure.
And again, I didn't read the whole thing, but off some headlines, it sounded as though the guy was peddling all sorts of stuff, but steroids specifically, had some big names involved, or at least was alluded to. Somewhere he brought Mark Wahlberg's name was coming in on this. I mean, he had some big names involved.
Josh Duhamel.
Yes, Josh Duhamel was in there. Yeah. And then all of a sudden he's doing a documentary on it, which makes me wonder, now wait a minute, was he filming these guys secretly? Was he recording them secretly? I don't know. But somewhere he had like this, hey, I'm gonna rat on everybody, including myself, because I think it's illegal what he's doing. I remember the Jerky Boys got busted for recording stuff. Certainly, this guy can't do it. But I don't know.
The Jerky Boys got busted for doing their shows?
Yes, you can't legal. It's a federal law. You can't record somebody without their knowledge.
Wow.
Jerky Boys almost went to jail.
Well, they only had like 7 albums. How long did it take before somebody finally figured it out?
Pretty damn quick. I mean, a couple of years, yeah.
That's a good point, like, because they would just press record. Because I think of Don Jameson and Jim Florentine used to have crank yankers where they would wait all day by the phone for telemarketers to call them.
Right.
And like, I guess in New York, there's a lot of telemarketers back in the day. So they would then press record and then drive these poor people crazy. But you couldn't do that either. You
couldn't
record a phone.
That's right.
Wow.
Yeah, you have to disclose it. Even somebody got in trouble. Was it Sasha Baron Cohen, Borat?
Yeah.
Ali G, yeah, he got busted because even when you do it on camera, you can go to the guy after the fact, hey, give me a quick release.
Yeah.
And he's like, screw that. And he knew he'd get fined. He's like, I just think I can make enough money to pay the fines. But eventually, that's why Borat's
gone. That's the biggest thing for all that stuff. If you do anything on the street, you have to get the person to sign right?
Have to.
Oh, yep. So that's why there's no more Borat.
That's why we don't have Borat. Yeah, he couldn't find a way around it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, pretty interesting. I don't know. How did we get going on that?
We're talking about the steroid thing.
Steroid thing. Yeah. So that's what I guess what Strom is doing. But there was some pay-per-view Sunday. This just happened.
Fastlane.
Okay. And so he took out essentially 12 guys. I listened to Jim Cornette faithfully. Jim Cornette is going to be pissed. I can tell you that much. His show hasn't dropped this week. He's going to be pissed that this happened. But I mean,
why do you think he's
going to
be pissed?
He doesn't like. He really believes in the old school of wrestling when it appears to be resistance offered. It appears to be competitive. It appears to be fighting. He doesn't like the high flyers. Doesn't like some of this stuff. I don't fully agree with him, but I am influenced by him. I do like that old school mindset, but that will drive him insane that Braun came out and essentially went through 12 guys, 6 teams, 12 guys by himself, buried 6 guys to put himself. It's going to drive him nuts. I'm just looking forward to the show. That's all I'm saying.
But the thing is with Jimmy, because that's how you push a monster. And I remember when Batista was first there as Leviathan, sure that some of that Jimmy would have done to make this guy like larger than life killer monster,
For sure.
I think Jim sometimes forgets what he used to do he likes to get the controversial and all that sort of thing. But speaking of the controversy, which is you're always known for, and I asked you this last time and I'll ask you again, because you actually did do some wrestling after the last time we spoke. Why have you never gone further into the world?
Man, I had so much fun. So I only got to participate a little bit. Jeff Jarrett was just getting Global Force going, and he didn't have a television deal, but he was doing some pretty hot shows in Vegas at the Orleans, which is a great arena, great talent. I mean, Bobby Roode was there. Oh, I just think he's so good. He is so good. I'm right about that. Bobby Roode's special talent. But at any rate, so I kind of went along when he went over to TNA, and I went over some voice work mainly, but I was getting ready to get involved, but Jeff was my contact. When Jeff left, I thought it was a work. I was sending him text messages, when's the pay-per-view? We're getting ready to do like a pay-per-view, and I've never heard back from him. I mean, he's literally gone dark, never responded to me. He got nominated where he'll be in the Hall of Fame WrestleMania this year, which was cool.
Sure.
There was rumors that he was going through rehab. I thought it was a work. Now I'm starting to believe him, but I don't really know.
But you did do Global Force, though. Because that was the first time you'd ever actually been in a wrestling situation.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And what was your job? What were you doing?
I had so much fun. You're bringing back good memories. I wish it was right now.
Let me explain this to people that don't know. The GFW is Jarrett's Global Force Wrestling. And he had a big TV taping, like you mentioned, in Vegas, where they recorded lots and lots and lots of shows, but they never got the TV deal because it's not as easy to get a TV deal as you might think.
Yeah.
So, but what were you doing on it and all that stuff?
Okay, so that's exactly what happened, and I didn't get to do any wrestling. I got to touch one guy for a second where Bobby Roode, was coming across the ring, and I had to change elevation and grab him, and then the other guy hits him, and we all tease Bobby. But other than that, I was just coming out and doing mic work. I was just cutting interviews, working up the crowd, and then going to the back. That was kind of my level of participation. And when I was in the back with the boys, I'm not one of the boys. I want to be, but I'm not. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't know what to do in the back. So I did the only thing I knew to do, which was go in a room that was empty with the door unlocked and sit by myself. Well, Chris McMaster, that annoyed him. Hey, why aren't you sitting here with us? It's like, dude, I didn't know I was welcome. I would rather be in there. You think I want to sit over here by myself? He's like, oh, private dressing room guy. No, you got this all wrong. Am I welcome? Let me come in your room. He's like, yeah, I expect you. Okay. So, but yeah, I had a great time. You know, the Bullet Club was over there right before they really broke through. That was cool, mm-hmm. You know, to see those guys walk out on Raw after I was in the back with them and stuff. So I had a great time, and he had good crowds too. I mean, he really got some pop and some good traction and some good talent. But as you said, it is cart before the horse. You don't have that TV deal until you have that product, and you put a lot of money into it. And I don't know where it goes. You know, I mean, it all rolled over into TNA, but I don't know what his participation moving forward TNA is going to be.
It's interesting because when you say the there's like the unwritten rule of how you're supposed to conduct yourself in the wrestling dressing room, but no one ever tells you what they are. There's no rule book or anything. Right. So you say you're trying to be polite, but then you come across as a snob or a guy who thinks his shit doesn't stink. You can't win for losing in that situation sometimes. What's it like in the UFC locker room when you go in there? Like, does everybody let me ask you this. So like in wrestling, you know, everybody's in a big room changing. Is it like that in UFC or is there more private dressing rooms for each guy?
No, you're all thrown in there. You got the red corner, the blue corner, you got one little mat that you're kind of fighting. Hey, when's it my turn, to warm up? And everybody just kind of gets it and gives you your space. But, I mean, it's silent. You could hear a rat piss on cotton in there because everybody's so nervous. Everybody's so scared. They're so freaked out, man. You're about to walk. Every time they open the door, you can hear the roar of the crowd. Every time the door shuts, eventually someone's going to open the door, call your name, and it's time to go. There's no schedule. There's no – I mean, if one fight you think it's 15 minutes, it ends in a knockout in 30 seconds. Boom, right. You're up. So it's hard to even know when to warm up, which just adds to your anxiety that you're already under. So, they're pretty tense, but they're not spread out. They're all really condensed because you have a commission. See, a commission oversees us, so they have to have eyeballs on everybody. They only have so many guys. So even if there are multiple dressing rooms, and a lot of these arenas there are, they don't let you go into them because you got to be in front of the commission at all times. Mm. If you go to the bathroom after you're wrapped, just to prove my point, they come in with you.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yes, or you got to cut your wraps off and start from scratch.
I know, like, when you get tested in WWE, like, if you have to do a piss test, and if you can't go, you have to sit there in front of them until you can go. You can't leave and go have, like, you know, four things of water. You got to literally sit there. One time, actually, me and Reigns of all people sat there for, like, an hour and a half, like, I can't go. I'm now, you get the stage fright. Drink as much water as you can. You got to sit there in front of these people. And that's, they're very, very strict about that.
Yeah.
You know, people don't realize this is real, real stuff.
Yeah.
It's not like Entourage where he pulled out the fake dick and you don't have any of that. They'll watch your dick to see if you can do it.
Which, to your point, adds to the stage fright. And then you're always annoyed with those guys when they show up, but then you try to think of their job. Man, they're underpaid. They're intimidated as all hell, and they just want to get home too.
Right.
So, you know, you kind of do it their way just to appease them and go, hey, man, let me help you out here, but I'm going to need to drink some water. We're going to need to wait a few minutes.
Do you think I want to look at guys' wieners for a living?
And then pack it around when he's done, right in a container.
Can you put your initials on this tube of urine that's yours?
Did you catch Reigns, what was it, about 2 weeks ago when he cut the promo on Brock Lesnar?
Yeah.
And shoot?
Well, I don't know. I mean, here's the thing, because this is what happened, and you'll probably know more about it from your end of the coin, being in the business of UFC or knowing about it a lot more than I do. But 3 years ago, Brock's deal was coming up, and that's right before he did the Mark Hunt fight, I believe. And there was some jockeying back and forth. Is he going to stay? Is he not going to stay? Is it leveraged? Whatever it may be. And then I think part of it was he was allowed to go do the Mark Hunt fight. Does the fight, and then he gets popped for whatever he got popped for, so then he gets suspended for a year, etc. So now it's negotiation time for WWE again. Is it real? Is it not real? Is he trying to work one side against the other? I don't know, but I want to ask you, how does that suspension Does it start now? Is he back in the pool? How does it work?
Yeah, so he's jammed up on that. I do not believe he can return to the UFC. Now, that isn't true. He can. There is a way. So let's work through this real fast. He got popped, and he had to serve a year. To serve that year, you must stay in the pool, which means even if he goes, look, I'm not going to fight, they're going to show up to his house and test him.
Random testing.
Gotcha. So, you know, the last thing he wants is to get tested, particularly when he's not competing. I mean, nobody would. And so he goes, okay, you know what? I'm retired. So that took him out of the pool, but at the same time stops his suspension clock. So let's just say for math, and I know I'm real close, let's say he stayed in for 4 months. Now he's got a 12-month suspension. He stays in for four. Then he exits. Great. When you want to come back, you're going to serve your 8 months. Then, because you're a past offender, you're going to give us 6 months of clean tests. So if Brock was to come back, and I don't think Vince understands this because, yes, he is getting worked, and eventually he will write a little bit bigger check. It's very good when you have leverage in negotiation. As a matter of fact, the only thing that helps in a business negotiation is leverage. Dana's more than willing to play along and help him out here on the off chance that Brock is serious. But Dana's a mark as well, right? Mm-hmm. He's dealing with a professional here. So... the real truth, if Brock was to come back, if my numbers are right, and they're very, very close if I'm wrong, but he's going to have to sit for 14 months. Well, you can't promote a guy. You tell me Brock's going to sit at home in Minnesota doing absolutely nothing for 14 months? Not going to happen. And, you know, he's already 40. If I'm wrong, he's 41. So it's just simply not going to happen.
Especially when the opponent that they're talking about, which would be a big money fight, is John Jones.
Right.
Is John Jones not... also under suspension as well?
He is under suspension, and it's kind of indefinite at this point. We know he's going to be between 2 and 4 years.
Wow.
But we don't know what that will be. He's got a ceiling and a floor, and he doesn't have that here. That hearing is pending. It's coming up very soon. But he's going to be sitting too. Now, Brock, you could put him with anybody, and there's not many fighters you can. In fact, they say there's only two fighters in history that can sell on their own, Mike Tyson and Oscar De La Hoya. Now, I believe that also has to encompass Floyd Mayweather at this point. Every other big fight has to have two guys, an A side and a B side, and they got to have a problem, and everybody has to know what it is, and then we can set up the ring and have a date and sell the tickets and make the popcorn. But Brock, you could put him in there against Jane Doe. It doesn't matter. He's going to do a million pay-per-views. He's a once-in-a-lifetime attraction.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So what is happening then? Is Brock being a genius and working the system?
Yeah.
Or does he think he can just cut right through the line and go back even though he's suspended?
No, I think he knows. I think what he is banking on one thing, which is that Vince just simply doesn't know the rules.
But
of
he has
USADA.
To. Vince would know.
You would think so.
I mean, Vince is as smart as Brock is. Vince is smarter.
For sure.
You know, I mean, I would think if he didn't know, he would make a couple calls and have somebody tell him, call Dana White and ask, you know what
sure.
I mean? I mean, it's interesting to me that I think what's happening – and I don't know because I'm not there. I think that they've been building this Reigns and Brock Lesnar thing for so long, and it's contingent on the fact that Roman is the babyface and Brock is the heel. It's not the case. I mean, Roman has a lot of fans more than he did before. A lot of people want to boo him. Brock is Brock. What's there to boo about Brock?
Sure.
He's a big, giant killer who beats the shit out of everybody.
Yeah.
Nothing to boo there.
No.
With a guy who can talk like Paul Heyman, who's really damn good at that, too. So I think knowing Vince is that maybe they're trying to work it to where Brock is anti-WWE, which is the only thing that maybe people respond to, that he doesn't respect WWE, doesn't care about the company, which in a lot of ways might even be true. But to kind of compound and work on that, maybe that will get Roman over as the guy who loves the business.
Sure. You know? So, and I like that.
Yeah.
Hey, I remember...
It's a smart move.
Yeah, you'll remember when Cena and The Rock were getting into it at WrestleMania, but Cena took that same approach.
Yes.
Hey, man, we're traveling the roads. I was in Australia 3 days ago.
Right.
You were at home on the couch. That was effective for me. And I frankly didn't, as good as The Rock is, and The Rock is very good at speaking, he did not do a great job in that. He was coming out and saying things that I thought added to Cena's point. You know, The Rock was coming out in what I perceived as a shoot, a promo shoot, but he was coming out and saying things like, so what that I left? I found something better. I left for something better. Who's going to begrudge me? Well, me as a wrestling fan, I'm going, doing Ice Mountain, doing Space Mountain is better?
Yeah.
That you just pissed me off. I wasn't mad at you before, but I am now. You're calling Hollywood better than the WWE? It offended me. And I think that The Rock, when he said it, he thought he was making a great point of, hey, everybody should be happy for me. You know, I was down in the trenches like you, but I found a way out. All of us are on the outside going, we do anything to be in those trenches.
Right.
What are you saying,
yeah.
Rob? What exactly are you saying?
Yeah.
I thought it backfired a little bit.
Well, and like you said, it ended up doing some great business, but you have to have the storyline of a good guy and a bad guy. So maybe this thing with Brock is the way to do it. Now, let me ask you a couple other things. I'm sure you've talked about this at length, but we haven't spoken about it. When you talk about, you mentioned Floyd, I think Conor McGregor is another guy that to a certain extent could probably draw against, you know, a Tijuana Taxi Driver.
Yep.
First and foremost, what did you think of the Mayweather-McGregor fight as a whole?
Loved it. Loved everything about it. I was pumped when it got announced. Everything worked. The timing was there. You got the undefeated Floyd against the two-time MMA champion in Conor. The buildup was incredible. You know, I don't think that that's arguable. I will share my opinion that I thought it was incredible. But anyone that says, no, it wasn't, I'll remind you, their very first stop was in L.A. on a Tuesday at 3 o'clock, and they sold out an arena. Now, generally for a press conference,
you
give tickets away. You open the doors. You put out marketing outside. You got girls, you know, in bikinis with little signs. You're just trying to get people. They sold tickets, Chris. They sold out to the point they were having scalpers to watch people talk about a fight with absolutely zero chance of a fight breaking out. And they sold out. They did this the next day, the next day, the next day. They did 4 days in a row on this world tour, sold out every damn place they went. And it was a ton of fun. And then when the fight actually came, it delivered. Conor should have got destroyed. He's never boxed before against a guy who's never lost at boxing before. Took 30 minutes. Took Floyd a half hour. I tell you, put myself in his shoes. I could not stand in there in a boxing ring with the world champion, my size, so it'd be heavyweight, for 30 minutes. That's not happening.
Let me ask you this, though. Do you think Floyd is so good that he was working it? That he let Conor, like the old Taz thing, survive if I let you, whatever the hell is, he let him go as long as he wanted him to go to make it a good fight?
I know that he's done a good job of rewriting the narrative to say I carried him. But, I mean, the bottom line is he was sweating out there. It was 30 minutes in, and Conor still never went down. It was the right stop. You know, just to remind you,
it was the right
stoppage,
way,
yeah. But he still didn't go down. I really thought that Conor represented himself well. I thought it was ridiculous they were making the fight. I thought it was ridiculous when people said Floyd would win, or rather that Conor could win. But he darn near proved them wrong. I mean, he did. He won several rounds against a guy who's never lost at a sport that he's never done.
Doesn't that also show, though, that like the commissions and all that stuff, it's really based around the money you can make and not the actual rules? Because if it was like just some guy off the street, there's no way they let a guy get in the ring that's never boxed before in his life. Obviously, money talks, and it was a great attraction. It made huge amounts of cash. But the purists, I could see why they had an issue with this fight in the first place.
The commission will always hang their hat on, we are here for fighter safety, to take your 6% and provide a job for ourselves. But they will always go back to that because rhetorically, nobody can really argue with that. It's kind of like education for kids. No politician can really argue against educating the kids. Now we don't have to hear that anymore. The gig is up. You're here for the money. We've established that when you put a 50-0 world champion against an 0-0 Irish kid. At least we've established one thing, that this is about the money.
Right, yeah. Totally.
So I'm happy with that because I knew it all along, but now you can't deny it anymore.
Yeah, at least they're saying it. What do you think about Conor, though? Why hasn't he got back? Will he fight again? Is he off the rails a little bit?
Yeah, so, I mean, it is a tough spot that he's in. First off, he's climbed the highest mountain twice. He did it simultaneously. He's got records that can never be beat.
Because What's the other one?
He won the world title at 145. Yeah. He came back and won it at 155. Mm. The two hardest weight classes, he grabbed the belts in both. Largely, if you go back and watch those matches, they were kind of flukes. I mean, he kind of did have luck on his side, but who cares? That's what dreams are made of, and he did it. So, again, I'm putting myself in his shoes. What would I do? I'm a competitor. I'd want to go out and compete while I'm still young and can do it. The other side of it is, what do I have to gain? I've already am the world champion, so now I have something to lose. He made $100 million to box Floyd. Dana wants to pay him closer to 10, which is huge money. I mean, to put that in perspective for you, Brock's biggest payday is 5.5 by Dana. Now, that's a huge payday by MMA terms. So when you double that for Conor, it's a very unique thing. It's a ton of money. But you do have to ask yourself, does he want to go out there and do something for a tenth of what he just got? And human nature largely says no.
Mm-hmm. And what else does he have to prove? But also, too, and you might know this as well, or you do know this, there's that desire to do something and to be like, you know what I mean? Like to show that you still got it or you're still the guy. Like, why would Floyd even be, I mean, he's probably bullshitting, but why would he even be entertaining the thought of going to do another fight in the octagon, whatever the hell he's talking about? He's 50-0. He's done, but he might want to still come back because it's kind of like what men do. always want more.
It's so seductive, man. It's the hardest thing in the world to walk away.
Right.
Yeah, from the lifestyle, from getting up in the morning, even if you hate it, and going to the gym and seeing the guys. I mean, you know, for most of us, that's our social life. Most of us don't have a whole bunch of friends. You got the guys,
yeah.
You know, who wants to leave that? Who wants to miss out on the hotels and the airports and walking in the arena, the paycheck that comes with it? Fame is a drug, and a lot of people don't realize that. And when you walk away from it, even in a short period of time, you want it. I mean, you'll see guys that famous guys that are off camera for a little bit. Well, they're tweeting more and more and more just to get that little reaction back. But it's this drug that they're trying to feed. And you know, Connor is an animal like that. And one thing that comes with having a bunch of money is you are faced with, what do I do with my time? Mm-hmm. I don't have to be at work anymore.
Right.
What do I do with my time? And everybody else is at work, so I have nobody to hang out with. What am I going to do with my time? And that's a real thing that I think they both have to face. And I think Floyd's facing that a little bit too. And the only thing more embellished than Floyd Mayweather's pay-per-view numbers is Floyd Mayweather's net worth. That guy is a dumb. And there's no other way to say it. And he will fight again because he has to. And he did make about $1 billion. But he spent about $1.1 billion.
Wow.
Yeah, he's one of those guys.
So you're saying that his pay-per-view numbers are embellished as well?
Tremendously.
Really?
Yeah, he was a good draw, for sure a good draw, but nowhere near what they claimed he was. I'll put this in perspective. They're trying to say that Conor versus Floyd was the biggest fight of all time. They are sticking by that. I went to that fight live. It didn't sell out. In fact, it wasn't all that close to selling out. Let's say there was 13,000 seats in that arena. 10,000 were full. That still, percentage-wise, leaves you with about 20% empty. If you're telling me you don't have a live house, but you're telling me you broke a pay-per-view number, the schematics don't work that way. They never have.
Interesting.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
What you were talking about before, when you were talking about it's hard to walk away, you're not fighting anymore.
I am.
You are going to fight.
I am. I just beat Rampage. Yeah, I just beat Rampage a few weeks ago. And
Beat Rampage a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, we didn't know.
Yeah.
So because the last time we spoke, you were thinking about it. You didn't know. I think you might have had some kind of a suspension that you were dealing with.
Yeah, I was in the principal's office.
So how many fights have you had in the last couple of years?
So I've had three. I won the last two, and I've got two left under my contract. But I'm also part of a tournament. So I fought Rampage. That was the quarterfinal. So I've advanced to the semis. Two other guys, a guy named Frank Mir and a guy named Fedor Emelianenko, are going to fight.
And what company is this?
Bellator.
So it's almost like you work in UFC, and it's almost like WCW or the Monday Night Wars. You do your WWE time, then you go to WCW with the other cats that were all you guys were together.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah, that's kind of exactly right. And so anyway, I'll take on the winner of that fight later in the year. Should I advance from there, I'll go fight for the champion or go fight for the championship of the tournament, but whoever wins the tournament, they're going to put the belt around. We'll be the world heavyweight champion.
So how old are you now?
40 years young.
Okay, so you mentioned that Brock is 40, almost 41, and you said that might be too old, but for you, is it because you're working with other guys or fighting other guys the similar age, or what's the difference?
Well, the reason I would make that commentary on Brock is, you know, you don't get better at something by not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not training, he's not staying active, he's not doing any of those things. And I can tell you, when I take 2 weeks off, when I take 3 weeks off, boy, the deficit that I go through to just climb back to where I was. It's not like when I was a kid where you could take summer 3-4 months off,
right.
Don't feel any of it. It's just not like that. And so Brock, you know, let's see, his last fight was Mark Hunt, UFC 200, a couple of years ago. He hasn't broken a sweat in terms of MMA since then. I would just imagine that it's hard to get too much better than if you bring in, and here's the other piece of it, Chris. If you bring in a guy like Brock, who's coming in for a one-night-only contract, if you're the promoter, and you know this better than anybody, but if you're the promoter, that guy doesn't get the shine. You can't bring him in and let him leave on top if you can control that. Mm-hmm. You want to make sure he passes that to the guy that's got 3 and 4 and 5 still left on his contract. And so that's ultimately what Dana would try to do. He'd try to bring him in there with somebody that can steal some of that shine. But when you have an attraction as big as Brock, if he's to put his foot down and go, no, give me another opponent, well, you got to listen to that. It's a little different. Dana's the big boss. He doesn't listen very well, but he's also a smart business guy, and it is Brock. There's some special rules that apply. That's fair.
What are the differences for you working in Bellator in comparison to UFC?
You know, I don't see a whole lot. The companies are smaller. Bellator has less than 50 employees. The UFC has 553 just in the Vegas office. So it is smaller. But Dana's largely, primarily a pay-per-view business. Bellator is just a live TV ratings, follow that basic Hollywood model. How many eyeballs can you bring in? How many ads can we sell? So their business models are slightly different, but I don't feel it. I mean, I hear some of that. You know, Coker's got his plan and Dana has his. But for us as athletes, man, that cage is the same size with the same rules. Yeah.
How's your training different now at 40 years young?
I can tell you it's less. I can't train. I can't go three times a day. I used to. And I was hurting when I did it, but I did it mentally and physically. I just can't do it anymore. You know, mentally though, too, I get tired. I can do two. I push through it, but it's a grind.
Explain what UFC training is, because you know WWE training would be lifting weights and cardio and that sort of thing for UFC.
So let's see. So in the mornings, I'll speak for most guys, but yeah, in the morning you'd probably do a run and a lift and spend about 45 minutes in total from the time I left my front door to was back. Maybe 15 minutes of weights, but it would be circuit because it's all cardio based. So you'd pump through like kind of like a CrossFit workout. Take some rest, go in the afternoon, early evening, and there you have your coaches and you have your team, and then you're pushing and pulling with actual bodies or punching and kicking or whatever the workout may be, and just get two a day that way. And a lot of guys do that, what I just described, 6 days a week. I do it five. I need 2 days of rest.
So when you were in there with Rampage, how did you beat him?
We ultimately went to a decision, but okay. I was able to score a little bit everywhere. I outstruck him a little bit in terms of landing. I don't think I hurt him. He was a big son of a bitch.
Plus, I mean, he's a big dude.
Yeah, I was hitting him as hard as I could, and he just stood there like it was nothing. But I did touch him a lot, and then I was able to get him down each round and score some points that way.
So when did this come back? Because like I said, the last time we spoke, and once you got to the principal's office, you were always ready to get back in again, or did it take a little bit of mental strength or...
Yeah, it took a little bit of both. You know, I was so relieved to be done. It was just a grind, and the road and the travel and the miles and the cutting the weight and the whole process and all those things I just laid out that were complaints. Chris, I missed them so much. Fast. In a month, I missed them so much. I missed having that discipline. I missed having that structure. I missed seeing the guys. I missed hearing my coaches yelling at me. And, yeah, I wanted to come back, man. And now I'm on the other side of it. I've got so much motivation right now. I don't ever want to be done.
It's interesting. Was there ever a factor of you thinking, and I'll answer with my thought process in a second, of you thinking I'm starting to get a little bit too old for this?
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit of that. And, you know, they'll always say train smarter, not harder. But as soon as a guy starts saying that, that's kind of the beginning of the end. Hard work has really never been beaten, not even by intelligence. But there is a way to do it. There is things that I had to cut out just to cut down on the minutes. I'll just give you an example. But we warm up for about 30 minutes. And, I mean, we're doing everything from forward rolls to cartwheels to your push-ups to your sit-ups. And I go, okay, well, that's 30 minutes of wear and tear on the body, even if it's light, 30 minutes of calorie burning, even if it's light. What if I cut those 30 minutes out, but I do the hard stuff? I do the hard rounds. I do all the hard stuff, but I cut out some of the lighter stuff. And it was able to cut down on about 50 minutes a day in the gym. So, you know, I went from about 3 hours in the gym a day to about 45 minutes in the morning, about an hour and 20 at night. And psychologically, at least, I still felt confident that I am working hard. I'm not working as long, but I feel like I'm still working. I'm doing the hard stuff. Is what I just described for you accurate or not? I'm going to need about a couple more years to tell you. But for right now, I feel like it is.
But here's the thing, and this is what I was going to say. So I just had a match in Japan, the Tokyo Dome, for New
Loved
Japan.
It. Thank Loved
you.
It.
Oh, you actually texted me about it. Thank you very
awesome.
Much. So here I am, 47 years old, and this is not necessarily my opinion, but the critics, oh, it's the best match of Chris Jericho's career. The oldest guy to ever have a five-star match at 47 years old. I don't feel 47, and it's weird for me to think that. Like, really? 47? That's weird. Because over the years, I've changed my way of training. I started doing a lot of yoga. We talked about that. I talked with Paige about that when I really needed it because my back was screwed up. And then a lot of biking, boxing training, but that's about it. Maybe a little bit of weightlifting here, but whatever. But I don't do the heavy lifting that I used to do. But yet, my cardio is just as good, and apparently I'm just as good as I ever was, even better, because I don't think that way. I never thought, oh, I'm getting too old. I never have ever said that in my life. I'm getting too old for this, because the world has kind of changed. What's old and what's not? I mean, I went and saw the Stones last year, and Mick Jagger was still the best front man in the world at 75 years old.
Sure.
So I think a lot of it has to do with your mindset.
I agree with that. You know, and they always talk about athletes being out of their prime. And, you know, even in the Olympics, which is the amateurs, but you're seeing, there was a swimmer named Dara Torres, and she was 42 years old and beating her personal records, and she was in the games four cycles before, so 16 years before. As I have gotten a little bit older as an athlete, I have noticed, I don't know about this whole out of your prime thing, but there is a point where mentally you don't want to do it. And everybody thinks it's a physical thing, but it seems like, no, mentally guys just don't want to get, my sport, the guys don't want to get up in the rain at 5 a.m. and go run 6 miles. They just don't want to do that anymore. They put their time in and they're done with it. But physically, you know, I could take a look at a guy and go, God, he looks pretty good. You know, he looks like he's really in shape. So I'm not sure that physically your prime, I'm not sure the world belongs to 18 to 25-year-olds. I'm just not. Mm-hmm. I just think that largely we used to see that because guys lost some of their motivation.
Right, right.
Yeah, and I think I'm right about that, and statistics do show me that I'm right too. Let me ask you. I didn't know you were 46. I would have thought you were about 42. I got to ask you something. I've been wondering this. Royal Rumble. I'm switching gears completely. Is that okay? Were you done with that?
Whatever you want to do.
Royal, there's a couple things.
I always find it's hard, like when you host your own show, to be a guest because you want to take the reins of the conversation. Well,
and
but go ahead.
And I'm pumped to be talking to you. So
let's do
it. I want to ask you a couple of questions to get them out of the way. And Dan and I were talking about them on the way over. So let me start with number one. Royal Rumble, your leg, shoot or work? Were you hurt?
Royal Rumble, which one are you talking about?
I'm talking most recent. It could have been two Royal Rumbles the way the time goes by. You hurt your leg very early and had to spend a lot of time on the apron, but you weren't officially out.
I think something happened when I think Brock suplexed me, and I landed flat-footed because he's very strong with his suplex, like not a German suplex, but like a normal suplex. And I think when I landed, my it's something we used to do in wrestling school, when you're first learning how to take a bump,
and sometimes
you land in the dungeon. Yeah, sometimes you land flat-footed, which means you land kind of on that under part of the arch of your foot, which really hurts. If you bruise that, you can't walk. And I remember that's what happened. That's a good point. I came down and nailed it, and then I think half of it was I was supposed to be on the floor anyways, just messing around, but. It was a shoot that did hurt.
Okay,
I forgot about it.
It looked like it did.
And
then there was some statistic that even came out after that. I think you had 22 minutes in the Rumble, and even the guy that won it had like 12 or something. You were like the longest.
I was 61 minutes last
total.
One. Yeah,
in
last
that
year
Rumble.
61. Yeah,
wow.
I think, and our listeners can tell me this. Text me or tweet me at Talk Is Jericho. I think I have the longest combined time in Royal Rumble history, like all the Royal Rumbles, if you add them all together.
You do. Yes.
You? Okay, so there
yep.
you go. And that's another thing. Like I'm sure people tell you stuff about your fights or your statistics that you didn't even know.
Yeah.
Because for us, it's just you get in there, you get out, you go to the next town, you do this, you do that. Like someone said the other day on that pay-per-view, you're talking about Randy Orton won the U.S. title, and he's now the second Grand Slam champion after Chris Jericho. And I'm like, what the f*** is a Grand Slam champion? I didn't know I was a Grand Slam champion. Do I get a plaque for that or something?
What is the Grand Slam champion?
I think it's you've won every title.
Okay.
In the, like, you know,
the Grand Slam.
Intercontinental, U.S., World title, whatever it is. There's whatever ones there is. And then the only ones that have done it is me and Randy. So that's the kind of stuff that you don't really realize when you work as much as we do.
So let me personalize this with the story I was telling you earlier where Chris McMaster's like, hey, what do you... What,
I think
what
it's just Chris Masters.
Chris Masters. Yeah. You know, thank you for that. What the hell are you doing in your own locker room type thing? Where it's like, man, I don't want to be in here alone
in the dark.
Let me tie that into Ronda. So Ronda allegedly...
I wanted to talk to you about her.
Yeah, she's getting a little bit of heat from the girls in the back for some of these same things.
Really?
You know, first off, she's coming in not doing the heavy lifting, and all of a sudden she's, you know, got
she's
a segment with
child,
Stephanie.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. She's going right into Mania. She's got the little Roddy Piper gimmick behind her. And there was some resentment there. I don't know that I can agree with that. I mean, a lot of times wrestling does bring in that star and they get some shine and pass it to everybody else. However, I do have to wonder if she's doing things in the back, like having her own dressing room, in which case I would just like to offer to Charlotte and the girls, maybe you haven't invited her over like Masters hadn't done to me, and the second he did, I didn't even have a seat in the boys' lot. I was sitting on the floor, but I was thrilled to be there. I just didn't know you were allowed to go in the workers' room.
Well, the thing with this, and I can already see it, is they're trying to make her a female Brock. And Brock, you know, and I don't know if you know Brock at all, but he's not the most friendliest of guys. He has his own dressing room, and he doesn't want to talk to anybody. I don't think he really likes people, to be honest with you. I don't know Rhonda. Do you know Rhonda?
Yes, quite well.
What's her personality like?
She's very nice. I like her very much. Mm. I don't know if I would say I like her very much, but she is a competitor at absolutely everything. And she's but I think that she would, I think she'd like to be welcomed. She had a hard life. A lot of people don't know that. You know, she dropped out of high school as a sophomore because she was trying to pursue an Olympic dream, of which she made. She was living in her car. She had no money. She didn't know where her next meal was going to be. I mean, she's really quite a success story in that way. And that part of the story never gets told. Mm-hmm. But I think it's fair to her that people do give that a little bit of credence, that she had a really hard comeuppance. She just happened to make it.
But she also really loves wrestling. And Piper really was kind of a ipso facto mentor to her, correct?
Yeah.
Is that a shoot?
That's the way she tells it. Yeah. And I do happen to believe her, because she wasn't saying that post-mortem like as a way of respect.
Well, he had her on his podcast, and I've never heard her on a podcast before, so that would tell me that there was some kind of relationship there.
Yeah, and the tie-in was Piper did some judo with a guy named Gene LaBelle,
yeah,
and kind of admired him, and that is who trained Rhonda.
Oh.
So that's where that connection came.
Famous California guy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow, okay. Well, that's the thing is, so they might have her with her own dressing room. And, you know, I'm sure if there's an agent involved putting together the deal, yes, Rhonda gets her own dressing room. Of course she does, no problem. But if she has the respect for the business, she's going to understand that you have to ingratiate yourself, great word, with the other
girls.
That was
girls, a great word.
Thank you. With the other girls in the back. Because, once again, it's the unwritten rule book of wrestling that nobody ever has.
Right.
So she might not know. And maybe if she did know, she wouldn't care like Brock, but at least it'd be nice if she kind of knew.
Let me ask you another question, speaking of the unwritten rules. When you get to the event and, you know, you're going to warm up, this is before the doors open and everything, you just arrive, you pack your bag, you go to the ring, work out a little bit. Is there a rule there that you go and shake everybody's hand and say hello? Can I not just throw a hello to you from across the room?
Listen, yeah, if you're at my point of, you know, 27 years, I'm not shaking anybody's hand. Hey, dude, how you doing, man?
Right.
I'll say hi to my friends, obviously, hugs, maybe a couple handshakes here and there. And to the younger guys, and this is a place where I'm in too, like, and this is not egotistical, it's just the way it is. When I come there, there's a lot of guys who look up to me because I've been doing this for a long time at a certain level. So I will make sure to shake their hands because it makes them feel
sure
happy and part of it, you know, especially a lot of the guys on the 205 Live. But as far as, like, if I go in and don't shake hands with, you know, three guys, if I don't go shake hands with Cesaro, Cesaro's not going to be mad at me.
Okay.
Hey, dude, what's up? How you doing? Good to see you. Maybe, you know, what's up? Pat in the back. But when you first started, you did have to shake everybody's hand.
It was the thing.
Oh, yeah. And if you didn't, you would get heat for being, you know, a snob, or this guy thinks his shit doesn't stink. That was like Eddie Guerrero. This guy thinks his shit doesn't stink. And meanwhile, it was somebody maybe who just thought it was best just to, I remember I was told you're supposed to speak when spoken to. It's like, well, yeah, that's after you shake everybody's hand and introduce yourself. Well, no one told me which one this is. It's like, well, that's the thing. There's no one giving you a rule book. You have to go and figure all this stuff out for yourself.
Right, and that was another. Everybody was coming up and saying hello, but it was with a handshake. It wasn't from across the ring. It was with a handshake. And I'm into hellos. I want to say hello to people too, but I didn't know about the
but
handshake.
But if you don't know everybody, you know, if you're talking about, I was saying Guerrilla Force. It was called GFW, was it?
Yeah, Global.
Sorry, Guerrilla Force Wrestling. I didn't check it out. Global Force Wrestling, if you have a whole new crew of guys and no one really knows anybody else, then yeah, you do shake everybody's hand and let everyone know that, like, whatever we got to do, we're a big team, it's cool. But in WWE, where you're working 4 days a week and it's every week, it's like, I'm not going to shake every person's hand in every locker room. It's just not going to happen. And I don't even expect anybody else to do it. Sometimes when guys come out, say, don't, save it, and you don't have to worry, I'm not going to be mad at you if you don't shake my hand. Just go away. You know?
Okay, but it is a thing.
It is a thing, and it was a thing, very important, back maybe 10 years or so when I didn't know as many guys.
Right.
But if you don't know people, it's just more polite, too.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Definitely, to introduce yourself.
But I can understand you. You see, you got caught in the middle okay? A, you feel like an outsider, and B, you really respect the business. So you don't know.
Maybe I'll just go sit here.
Right. If you didn't really respect the business and not maybe just didn't know as much, or not from a Mark standpoint, but from a big fan standpoint. If you're just some guy that came in like Dennis Miller, he's just going to walk in and say, hey, what's going on in here, guys? How's everything going? Hey, Dennis. Because he doesn't really care. For you, you're oversensitive to it because you're such a huge fan.
Yep.
You know?
That's what happened.
And I
bring that up to personalize it because I do worry about Rhonda got married and now she's not allowed to talk to any of her guy friends.
Oh,
so.
Shit, one of those things.
Yeah, so you got to respect that when that happens, but it's one of these deals. And she used to be great. She'd take every phone call. She'd make the phone calls. I don't get to talk to her anymore. So I read about her. But I do worry about her in one regard, that the girls don't like her. I would just offer you this, and I know the divas listen to your show. I would just offer this, maybe extend the olive branch to her. Don't forget, she is the new girl, and she does lack some social sensitivities and social norms.
Well, and some wrestling sensitivity, too.
Yeah, she did drop out of high school as a sophomore and lived in a car. I mean, I think it's a great story, but the other side of it is you're not going to know how to handle yourself in social situations when you have that in your background. I just suggest
this. But you're right, though, especially once again going back to this unwritten rule book.
Right.
How are you supposed to act? How is she supposed to know? And I'll also say this. Happens quite a bit. It's never happened with me, but it drives me crazy all the time when you get people, girls or guys, that are angry about Ronda Rousey being there. And, for example, she came out at the end of the Royal Rumble, the first ever female Royal Rumble, and all the attention's on Ronda Rousey. And there's some girls that were mad about that. Don't, because wrestling is about one thing. It's not about great matches. It's not about taking bumps. It's about making money. And if Ronda Rousey comes in, and because she's Ronda Rousey, instantly becomes the top girl in the dressing room and all the focus is on her, well, guess what? That's just the way it is. It's the same thing that happens when Brock comes in or when The Rock comes back. People are pissed off when The Rock comes back. It makes money. That's what wrestling is. It's not he's taking my spot. There's no spot to take. It's The Rock. It'd be like, I don't know, give me anybody. Arnold Schwarzenegger in 1988 decided he wanted to be a wrestler. Guess what? He's
going to
be the top guy in the business.
Yeah.
And guess what? All the guys, I've been on the road through. Like, who gives a shit? This is a different one. This is what wrestling is. So with the girls who were complaining about Ronda Rousey, I couldn't believe it. It's like, guys, I understand. It was the first female Rumble. You guys deserved it. But guess what? Now suddenly women's wrestling is going to be on par with men's wrestling. She's the bridge that's going to take you there. So sit back and enjoy the ride. It's going to be more money for everybody. And if you get to work with her, forget about it. You know?
Yeah. Hey, let me ask you something. The way wrestling used to work, from what I've been told, and this is before television, this is before you had distribution, you had that whole revenue stream, when you're just doing a house show, the wrestlers were clearly defined what they were going to get in relation to the promoter, of 40% or 60%, but whatever it was, there was a standard of the industry for this is how much the boys are going to get of this amount. Here's what the championship match is going to get. Here's what everyone, and that could trickle down to $25 gas money. That could trickle $5,000. Am I right about that? There was some kind of a split, though, that was defined.
Not
is that
really,
true?
Not really. There's kind of like no one really knows what the split is. You're kind of at the mercy of the company.
But in the olden day, I'm saying.
In the olden days, okay. the NWA champion, who would be Ric Flair.
Yep.
I believe, Harley Race and these type of guys, for example, when they went to Houston with Paul Bosch was the promoter. You would know you're getting 5% of the gate that night. I think Bruno Sammartino with Vince's dad was like that. So if you went into Madison Square Garden in 1970 and you had a $50,000 house, you would walk out of there with $2,500, which in 1970 I'm sure was like,
awesome.
25 grand or whatever. Yeah. So that was just for the champion. As far as everybody else and to this day, there's really no set rule how much you're going to get unless you cut a special deal with Vince.
Okay.
So now it's like you'll make a certain amount of money on a contract. Let's say it's, $10,000. And when you work your matches at the end of the year, you'll either make less than $10,000, in which case you don't have to give anything back, or you'll make more than $10,000. Let's say you're at 13, then you'll get a check for $3,000.
Okay.
That's kind of how it works.
Okay, and that was going to be my question. Yeah. So is just simply, do they do that today? Is everybody just on a guarantee, or does the house still go
to
the boys
a little bit?
Of the both. Okay.
You're on a guarantee, and the house goes to the boys. And if you can make that money, if you fill up the tank and spill over, you'll get the spillover. If you get half tank, you're not going to have to pay anything back, but the next contract you get is probably not going to be for the same amount of
right.
money.
Right.
And that's all Steve Austin told me in 1999 when I first came in. He said, Vince takes care of his guys. If you become one of Vince's guys, a.k.a. guy who's making him money, he'll take care of you. And I can tell you from my experience, that's true. I don't know what everyone else is getting. I don't care. Because if some guy is getting more or less, I just worry about what I'm doing.
And right.
You know, so I want to ask you one more question about Ronda Rousey. She was so huge in MMA, and then she lost one fight, and it kind of killed her self-confidence. And the next one, she didn't even look like the same
massacre,
girl.
Yeah.
How does that happen? Why did that happen with her, in your opinion?
Okay, well, there's a couple of things, and none of them are pleasant. But to just answer the question real straight, that whole thing was smoke and mirrors. She was never very good to start with. It was just a reality that the other girls were worse. And to qualify that, so there doesn't sound like any mud being thrown here, she was a judo practitioner. She was very good at judo to the point that she even earned a medal for this country in the Olympic Games. She got a bronze. However, outside of her, in the history of mixed martial arts, there has never been a judo champion. There's never been a judo contender. There's never even been a judo back it off to a semifinal at contenders. Nobody with judo has ever done anything in mixed martial arts. The sport of judo, as far as being a combat sport, sucks at best. And that would be me putting it nicely. It is not a good sport. There's a reason that the NCAA does not recognize it. There's a reason that there's not a single high school in all of the lands that has a judo program. So when she came in, and this isn't a slight on her, she was a rough and tumble gal. She was a great competitor. She understood you versus me. People are watching and judges are going to score this. She understood all of those things, and she did them very well. But the real truth was she wasn't very good, and the other girls were just worse. And she has done to this day, right, being the biggest star, the biggest draw, and the greatest of all time to this day, including amateur fights, 12. Mm. Now, you tell me anybody that's ever been good at anything that's only done it 12 times. Could you imagine LeBron James on his 12th basketball game, Tiger Woods in his 12th? It doesn't work that way. It was all smoke and mirrors. And being Ronda's friend, I thought that she understood that. She was right place at the right time. She
understood great look.
Great look. I was just going to say she always knew where the camera was, and she knew exactly what face to put out. She wasn't afraid to be a heel and be a cool heel and be a sexy heel at the same time. Hard combination, but she fit the bill. I thought that she understood, I'm none of these things they say I am, but boy, am I in the right place. I thought she knew that, and she came out after she had lost to Holly Holm. That was the first loss. 7-1 favorite going into that. Absolute massacre. She lost the fight. She talked about doing a suicide. And I share that with you. Very dark thing. But it let me in on something. That was when I realized, oh my gosh, she doesn't know this isn't real. Mm. She doesn't know that she's not. Ronda, you've only done this 8 times. How could it possibly be that you're the greatest end-all be-all? I had no idea that this young gal fell for it. I didn't know that, but she did. She marked out for her own gimmick. That's true. That's not a criticism as much as that's just what happened.
And then the second fight after that, that was the end of it.
Yeah, the girls had kind of caught up at that point.
Gotcha.
You know, the girls, just there wasn't a very deep pool. There was a time, Chris, where if you came to me and go, okay, I'm a female and I want to be a top 10 contender. I go, okay, well, raise your hand. There's not 10 other girls in the world that are doing this sport, literally.
Mm-hmm.
So it was that thin of a pool. And all of a sudden, when Dana put some energy behind that division and put him on top of the card, and all of a sudden he's writing big checks, a lot of more girls said, hey, I want to give this a shot. And that's just all that happened. It was just a simple numbers game.
Who is the best female fighter?
The one that would win that popularity vote, if that's the way we did, is a girl named Chris Cyborg.
Okay. Yeah.
And she is nasty. She's definitely in the discussion.
She still fights, right?
Yeah, she's a champion of the world. Mm. And I personally think that that a fight between her and this gal named Amanda Nunes, and that's the second one that destroyed Ronda in like 56 seconds.
She's a mean-looking chick.
She's mean as hell. She's rough. She believes in herself. She's got the skills. I don't know if she has the gas tank, but everything else, I could give her a 10 in every category. And they're going to fight. They're going to fight each other. And I don't get excited for women's fights. I was very chauvinistic about this. I took a while to come over and go, okay, wait a second. They're very good.
Mm.
I took a while, though, and I think I had a right to. I don't think you could always say they're very good. I don't think they were sacrificing the same. That's changed. I am so excited for that fight. And I can't tell you that I've ever really been that way for a female fight, but when Amanda gets in there with Cyborg, there's going to be something special to see.
When you're talking about a special fight, and now that UFC just sold for $4 billion or $5 billion or whatever it was, then in succession lose Ronda Rousey, John Jones is gone, Connor's whatever
Who
the
knows?
Hell Connor's doing. what's going to happen? Like, how can they start recouping that investment? Is there other guys coming up that you think can be those marquee names?
Yeah, absolutely. And how do you do it? You know, Vince McMahon looked into buying the UFC at one point. And the backstory on it is he was going to buy it and shut it down and get it out of the pay-per-view market. But Vince had said something, and I've clung to this, and I think that everybody else, particularly in hindsight, needs to understand he's right. And Vince said, you can't make a star if you can't control the outcome. And he said, that's why the UFC is never going to work. Now, they succeeded in spite of that for X amount of time. They're in a dip right now. They're going to succeed and work through this. They're in a dip, but they do have guys that were absolute stars or on their way to it, but you can't control the matchups. It just happened with a guy named Mike Perry. Man, this guy was everything. He was the look. He was the talk. He was the style. He lost two in a row. There was a guy named Anthony Pettis, maybe the best example. 30 months ago, Chris, he was on the cover of the Wheaties box. And now some people think he's retired and out of the sport. He's not. He's still in there. But that's how far his star declined. He didn't do anything wrong. He just didn't get his hand raised mm-hmm. when he needed to. And I don't feel that the MMA guy, Chris, I will lose a fight and my stock will go up. But I've planned it ahead of time. What if I lose? The last thing they're going to remember is that fight. That's what everybody thinks. Everybody's wrong. The last thing I get to do before I walk into that ring is I get on that microphone. I need my excuse ready. I need my exit strategy ready. I need my next opponent ready. I need a combination of those three. But whatever it is, I'm not walking out hanging my head. I'm just not. I'm getting ready for the next thing. I use myself as an example, but some guys do miss that, and they do believe their own press clippings. That, hey, I'm the king of the world, or hey, I'm not worth anything. And I think that's kind of where Ronda came in. With some of that really dark and negative talk. And most people steer away from, I don't. I think that there was a lesson to be learned there. I'm glad that she worked through it. I'm glad she shared it with everybody else. But when the marketing for one match ends, the marketing for the next match begins, whether you win or you lose. And not very many guys understand that. And nobody in the MMA business, in the wrestling business, they'd explain that to you. In the MMA business, they won't. And I don't know why they won't. But nobody explains to them, you have a job to do and you have an audience watching. So do your job and cry in the back privately.
Did you get that from pro wrestling?
100%. Yeah. Get everything from pro wrestling. Yeah. Who do you think? Are you telling me for 1 second Donald Trump hasn't been influenced by pro wrestling? Absolutely.
Of course he has.
And look what happened.
He won.
He's a great worker. He understands psychology.
You know, Floyd's the same. Floyd told me before, he goes, listen, man. He goes, I know my role. He goes, I got it all from wrestling. Do I believe I'm going to win the fight? Most of the time, yes. But I have to make sure that everyone hates me so much they're going to pay to see me lose. Now I'm never going to lose. But I got to make sure to make people. That's Ali got it from Gorgeous George. Yep. I mean, that's, you got to have that show business aspect to it, or else you're just a boring guy. And that's why boxing is so much problems right now. Heavyweight boxing, there's no characters.
Yeah.
You need a character.
Yeah, you need a character.
Got to have that.
Yeah, so, you know, to your question that got started on this is, you said, look, the UFC sold, and then they lost their two biggest stars in Ronda, and what's going to happen with Conor, and Jon Jones on a suspension, and now Brock's back in the WWE. And the answer is pretty simple. You know, Dana has had to start over at square one a couple of times, and he does start over, but he can't do it overnight. He just can't. He needs a little bit of time. So, yes, you are going to have some dips. You're going to have some valleys. Yeah. Scott Coker, who is my promoter now, same situation. Guys' contracts run out. Some of them leave. Some of them retire. Some of them get stuck in the principal's office. I mean, there's a lot of things that happen where you lose the guy that you were hoping to be your marquee guy. But you go back to the drawing board the next morning and you start over. And sometimes you end up in the spot that Dana just came out of, where you've got four. You only need one of those guys. One of those guys can do something special, you know, for your bottom line over the course of a year. Dana ended up in a spot where he had five of them, and he's only got so many shows, and he can start stacking them up, a main event and a co-main event. And it's a pretty cool place. But yeah, then there's a dip and you start back over.
It's interesting too, like, that's a great point by Vince, in that, you know, you can't make a star if you can't control the outcome. It's a classic Vince point.
Yeah. You know? Well, people will always talk about who the world's best promoter is. And I'll hear names, you know, Dana White, Scott Coker. You'll hear Don King thrown in there. And it's like, guys, those wonderful choices. Yeah. The world's best promoter is Vince McMahon.
Agreed.
Vince McMahon said, and he's right, he said, I could sell out Madison Square Garden. Do you know this quote? I could sell out Madison Square Garden to have a wrestler wrestle a mop if I had enough time to promote it. And Chris, he could.
Of course he could.
And we both know a little bit of us. I think the mop's going over tonight. By the time it was ready to go, we go, I don't know. You know, the mop said this. And, you know, I could. And that's
so
the
true.
Genius of Vince. And when I bring up the Donald Trump reference, what does Donald Trump know better than anybody think? He understood psychology. He knows how to talk to his people. He knows how to communicate. What does Vince understand better? People always think he knows business or he knows wrestling. Vince isn't out there teaching drop kicks and sunset flips. Good memory. I missed the sunset flip. He's evoking emotion through psychology. That's what the wrestling business is. When I almost got my chance to wrestle, and I was on the phone with Jerry Briscoe, and he said, look, you're 33 years old. You're just simply too old for this. You win the UFC title. I had a title fight coming up with Anderson Silva. He goes, you win the strap, we're going to sign you. You don't win the strap, we don't want you. And he said, because you're 33, we think you could learn how to wrestle in very quick time, 6-7 months. We think it's going to take 2 years for you to learn the psychology. I thought, what the hell does that mean? I know what it means now. Mm-hmm. It took me a little bit of time. I wasn't as smart of a mark as I thought I was.
Mm-hmm.
And he's right. There is a psychology that you guys do. Chris, you were in a Royal Rumble match for 61 minutes. I'm friends with you. And I didn't know until 5 minutes ago whether you were really hurt or not. And I've wondered it, haven't I? Have we talked about it? We've talked about it. I got a friend here in the corner with no mic that I'm pointing to. But I want you to know this is a shoot. But that's what's so brilliant about it. And that's the brilliance that you guys do. And I think it's why you can extend your career and the rest of us can't.
As we wind down here, I want to ask you a mutual...
Where do you have to be? What do you mean as we wind down here? What do you got to... Here's your hat. What's your hurry? You got somewhere... You don't know anybody in Portland. Huh?
Well, let's be asking you about a guy that we both know in CM Punk.
Yeah.
He trained for a long time. I know I'm not sure if you helped him out with his training in the first fight, whatever it was, or give him advice. He lost very quickly, but I still gave him credit
for sure.
Going for it. But now... He's back in business again, and yep. Dana's going to give him another fight. Tell me a little bit about the Punk experiment. What went wrong, what went right, and why now Dana's giving him another shot?
Okay, so let's start at the beginning here, because this part of the story never gets told. CM Punk's going to come over. What's he going to do on its surface? Well, he's going to do what Brock did. He's going to come in, he's going to take the main event spots, and he's going to leave with all the money
right. And
laugh at the rest of us. Well, not so fast. First off, he dropped CM Punk and came in as Phil Brooks. Second off, he committed everything to this, left wrestling. I realize there were some reasons he had to leave, but the bottom line is he left. He locked himself in a gym with a room full of killers, with the best coach, or amongst the best coaches in the world in Duke Rufus, in a fantastic facility. He cuts the weight. He gets disciplined. He makes the walk. That was something that people of all walks of life should be able to relate to. Here is a bucket list item. Here is a guy given an opportunity to fulfill his dream, and he's got the courage and balls to do it with his shirt off in front of the world and live with the result. That was a very cool thing that he did. Instead, of course, people teased him, right? People are a bunch of dicks. He did not leave with all the money. He didn't hold Dana over a barrel. He didn't say, he said, I want to do this.
Yeah.
And to prove
he did
to
it
you,
for the right reasons.
That's right. Yeah. To prove to you, you go ahead and keep your mind. I want a fair, but that's all I want. I don't want anything more than what's fair. You make me an offer, I'm going to sign the contract. And that's exactly what happened. The first offer Dana made, he signed the contract. So his heart was in the right place. He was a competitor. He did everything right. He loses. So what does he do? He locks himself in the gym again. He begs for another opportunity, and he finally gets it. And quite frankly, the song is not likely to end any different than the first one. But if people can't get on board, see him around town, talk to him on social media, say, man, that was a cool, ballsy thing you did. I have no idea what's wrong with them, because that is the bottom line. And he did everything right. He did everything respectful. And he did help the boys. There was a little bit of jealousy when he came in, because he could get on shows that some of the other guys couldn't. He could get on SportsCenter. He could get on FS1. He could get on Jim Rohn.
There's a lot of buzz about him.
There's a lot of buzz about him. And some guys had resentment. Why is he sitting at ESPN and I'm not? It's like, well, because ESPN can get ratings with him.
Same reason why people in the WWE would be mad when Brock shows up or Ronda or whatever it may be. So that was the first fight he had. Is it just because you can't go in there with no experience against the guy who's been training for this for, what was the guy's name, Mike?
Was his
opponent's name?
I'm misplacing it as well. I'm not even sure it's Mike.
Mike Johnson.
Yeah, I know exactly who
Mickey.
He is.
Mickey what?
Mickey Gall.
See, that's the guy right here. Mickey Gall. So Mickey Gall, even if he's had a couple fights, but this is a guy who's been training for this for 5 years, whatever. Punk comes in and trains for 6 months. Is it too hard?
Yeah, 36-year-old that had never done it and kind of locked himself down in the gym, sacrificed at all those great things I talked about, but he did it for about 8 months versus a brown belt in jiu-jitsu who's 22 years old named Mickey Gall, who's looking to make a life and a career out of this instead of Punk that's looking to come in and get the experience. Yes, it was a different situation, and while they tried to match him up appropriately because of records, I believe Gall was 1-0 and Punk was 0-0. there's just a few more moving parts. And yeah, he's going to get cleaned up and he's going to get teased. But what did he do like a man? He got back in the gym and said, let me try again. I think I can do better. And frankly, I think he's right. Now, what's better? Is better a win? I don't think so. He may get there, but I don't think it is. He didn't get out of the first round with this Gall kid. Let's say he makes it into the third round in his next fight. Well, that's better.
Of course.
That's better. That's improvement. And I think that Punk is one of those guys that doesn't take himself too seriously. I think. I don't know him terribly well. I've known him a long time, and I like him a lot, but I've only got to visit with him and be with him in person a handful of times. But that is my perception. He is a guy that doesn't take himself too well. I was in Chicago, his hometown. He asked if I wanted to get something to eat. I said, yeah. I come outside with Sean Shelby, who is a boss at the UFC, works right underneath directly with Dana White. Some guy pulls up in a hoopty with, like, I mean, like, the tailpipe is dragging and blah, blah, blah. And it's a two-door. It's filthy dirty. This must have been a 1982, 83 car. The Raider, it's freezing cold outside. The heater doesn't work. It's Punk. He gets out. This is his car. This is his hometown. He's rich, not for nothing, but this is also his hometown. This is what he's driving. Well, it turned out, so Errol Hawani decides to come along. Now we've got to fit four guys in a three-seater car. It's a two-seater car, but somebody could go in the back, which ended up being me because Sean's a boss at the time. CM Punk, without missing a beat or knowing any of us, pops the trunk for Ariel to get in, and he's not kidding. He wants Ariel to get in the back while we shoot up town to this burger joint. We end up cramming in because Ariel was too claustrophobic to get into the trunk.
Yeah.
I'd skip the meal. But at any rate, I think that does speak a little bit to a guy that doesn't take himself too serious, and I think that that's a big advantage that he has in life.
Why would Dana give him another fight?
I think he probably had to beg for it, quite frankly, and I think he probably had to say all the right things, which was just to come clean privately and go, man, I'm humiliated. I thought I could do better than that. I didn't. Everybody's teasing me. I'm working my ass off, and whether it ends the same or not, I won't ask you for any more money, any more placement. I'm not working any gimmicks here. I'm a straight-up guy. I've left Vince, and this is all I've got. Mm. And Dana would go, you got it. Guaranteed. Dana's a real guy.
It's going to draw, though. I mean, I'll watch it,
once
again.
No, you bet it will. Yeah, it'll draw. He'll get a little attention. The attention will be different. He'll get teased. He'll get asked the question you just asked. Hey, why are you doing this again? You didn't just do so hot the first time, and now you're 2 years older. But he'll fend it off. He'll answer, and he'll probably answer it with a shoot. You know?
Do we know any names that he might be facing?
No, but I can tell you one cool thing is it's going to be in Chicago.
Mm.
Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, it'll be in Chicago. So imagine the pop. Imagine
okay,
the
yeah,
gate.
Yeah, just for him. Right.
Yeah, pretty sweet. You know, that might even propel him to a co-main event spot. Maybe not that high on the card, but he'll be a main card fight. He'll be featured. And I look forward to it. And yes, quite frankly, if you're a betting man, you probably want to go against Phil on this one. But who cares? That's not always what it's about.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a two-man sport, man. Yeah. Somebody's going to win, and it's not always going to be
Someone's
you. There's no shame.
Well, since you said that I didn't have anywhere to go, this is your chance now if you have anything you want to ask me about.
You know, I want to ask you about so many things. I wanted to ask about the Royal Rumble. I wanted to get into the Ronda thing. And, you know, you shared your opinion with Brock. And, yeah, I think that it's pretty transparent. I think that he is trying to play both sides. I think that he pretty clearly ends up in wrestling. And it does always make me wonder, though, does a guy like Brock work everybody, or does he bring someone in on it? For example, does he sit down with Dana and go, hey, Dana, here's what I got going on. Never going to happen. Vince has stuck it up your ass a couple of times. Help me stick it up.
I don't think so.
I don't either.
I think there's one guy that Brock talks to. This guy called Brad Ringens, who was a wrestler for the AWA in the 80s. I worked a lot for New Japan. I believe he was a U.S. medalist in wrestling.
Okay.
Bronze, something like this, early 70s. I see Brad around from time to time with Brock, and I think that might be his confidant. But Brock is, I don't think Brock is really opening up any cards to anybody because he wants to work Dana too.
Sure.
If Dana paid him $5.5 million, he wants to make 10 this time.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, like I said, he's a very, I don't think he likes people. He's the only guy I've ever met that's moved to Saskatchewan.
Yes.
Most people can't wait to get the fuck out of Saskatchewan.
Right.
I'm from Winnipeg. I would never be caught dead living in Saskatchewan.
Never.
He moved to Saskatchewan because he didn't want to talk to anybody. So, you know, whatever you say, pro or con, the guy's done a great job of building a mystique and building this war between the two most powerful promoters of our generation, let's be honest, in two different sports. So, you know, will he fight again? I didn't know the exact specifics of what you just told me for the 14 months. If he wasn't under suspension, it wouldn't surprise me if he did leave Vince to go for another fight.
Yeah.
But now that the guy he's supposed to fight is under suspension, I don't know. I'd say most likely he's probably going to go back with Vince.
I think that's most likely, too. And, you know, one thing about Brock, and a lot of people have said, well, he'd never get in there with Jon Jones or the current heavyweight champion, Stipe Miocic. He'd never get in there. If you've studied Brock Lesnar, and at any part of you comes away with the conclusion that he's a coward, you did not study Brock Lesnar.
Mm-hmm.
He's a lot of things, but a coward is not one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And he will step in there with whoever they ask him. He's had his ass kicked and known plenty of times, man, I'm walking in over my head. And he made that walk anyway. I think he deserves that credit. I want to ask you something. I want to really go back on this one. But Vince Russo, and I know you got to work with him in your time at WCW. Does he get a bad rap? Was Vince Russo bad for the business?
No. I think I only worked with Vince. So Vince is the guy that brought me in to WWE indirectly. There's a guy called Don Callis who runs Impact Wrestling now. He was working in WWE. He was kind of the middleman because I was in WCW not really doing much. And one thing led to another, and I ended up coming to WWE basically on Vince Russo's recommendation. Obviously, Vince signed off on it. 2 months after I got in there, Vince jumped to WCW. I haven't seen him since. But I think just from what I hear and from what I saw the brief time, I think Vince a lot like Disco Inferno. He'll have 10 ideas. 5 will be great. 5 will suck. But he doesn't know the difference.
Sure.
Whereas Russo did not create the Attitude Era or architect the Attitude Era. It's Vince McMahon. Vince McMahon is in charge of everything. Vince McMahon is probably in charge of NXT, at least as far as who stays new goes. So don't kid yourself about that. So I think that with the filter of McMahon, that Russo thrived because Vince McMahon probably went good, bad, shit, bad, great, sucks. Whereas when Vince Russo went to WCW and had no boss and no filter, that's when you started seeing, you know, Mike Awesome, the fat chick thriller, and all these freaking stupid things. You know, what was Ed Ferrar was like Oklahoma doing a Jim Ross. You know, those things probably would have been in WWE had there been no Vince to censor it. So Vince Russo was not bad for the business. I think he was a great part. I don't want to say cog in the machine. I think he was a very important part of the machine of the Attitude Era. But you also had Bruce Pritchard involved and you had all these other guys involved. And you had Vince McMahon piloting it. So that's the difference.
So in Russo's time in WCW, it would essentially fall. I mean, his job is to come up with ideas no matter how wild. Essentially, if there's blame, and there's blame, I mean, they went under, but that would fall to Bischoff in fairness, correct?
Well, the thing is, there was no boss in WCW. That's the difference. And the first thing when I went to WWE from WCW, I knew what was up. Vince is the boss for every aspect. You have any problems, you talk to Vince. WCW, you didn't know if it was Bischoff or was it Hogan or is it Kevin Sullivan or is it Terry Taylor? Is it Scott Hall and Kevin Nash or, you know, Sting or Warrior or Macho Man? Who has to approve these things that we're doing? So I think when Russo came over, I'm sure, yeah, the buck stops with Bischoff, but I don't think there was really much of a filter. I think they probably brought Vince in and Vince probably said, listen, one of the caveats is I write the scripts and with the exceptions of a Hogan, I have the final say on what it is. And maybe Bischoff went, okay, I don't know. I just know that I think he probably oversold his value to WCW, so they brought him in with full creative control, let's say.
Sure.
Whereas in WWE, to this day, Vince is still the boss.
Gotcha.
You know, every decision that, everything that I have, anything, is I deal with Vince, because everyone's got to go to Vince anyways.
Right.
Why do I want to talk to this guy, or this guy, or this guy, when they say, well, we got to go talk to Vince? I just talked to Vince. That's it. So,
you know, Scott Hall said the same thing. He said, hey, I really like Eric Bischoff, but he was one of the boys.
Vince wanted to be a boss. Yeah. And Hall and Nash manipulated Eric. They ran their own stuff there. Because Bischoff, he would always say, that's not my money. It's Ted Turner's money.
Sure.
Well, Vince McMahon's money is Vince McMahon's money.
Yeah.
So there's a big difference.
Yeah.
You know.
And a final thing I'll ask you, what about old Sonny? She's still in the clink? Did you read about that? She got picked up in Jersey?
I probably read as much as you do. I think that's like, you know, it's a sad thing, man. There's certain people that you just get over and over and over again. And sooner or later, you know, they're either going to turn into born again Christians and you know, and hopefully save themselves or whatever they have to do. Or it's the other side of the coin. And with her, you just never know, man. It's like one thing after another. The best thing for her is for them to just put her in jail for like 5 years. You know what I mean? At this point, with all these DUIs, like, dude, you can't do that, man. Because one of these days you're going to kill yourself or worse, kill somebody else.
Sure.
You know, it's just too many warnings. So it's too bad. She's a cool chick, and I've known her since 1994, but there's definitely a downward spiral going on there. So God bless her. Hopefully she can pull herself out, but she needs some help other than just being allowed to kind of do all this stuff. You know what I mean?
Cool.
I mean, have you seen that before with people that you know?
Yeah, I certainly have. And I mean, even with her, and I don't know her.
Yeah.
But I know of her. I mean, gosh, she was in my living room every Monday night for a while. But yeah, it was a big mess. You know, she got into the porn and she got into some of this weird stuff. And then I did see that she got picked up.
It's a lot of similarities with China. You can see the similarities between the two of them that were so huge and then fell down, and there's addiction and there's porn, and porn is never a good sign.
Sure.
You know, if you're going into porn from something else, it's probably your last ditch effort. You know what I mean? To make some cash. So needless to say, the Chael Sonnen and Chris Jericho porn will not be happening anytime soon.
Well, I love how you said it, like you had stumbled onto something brilliant to impart. Yes, Captain Obvious. Yeah, you are right. Porn is not a great sign.
There's the tagline for the show.
That's
porn
right.
is not a great sign.
And with that, get over to DDP Yoga. Sign up with the promo code Chris Jericho.
Thank you, dude. Always a pleasure, man.
You're awesome. Thanks, buddy.
All right, check out Chael Sonnen's podcast. You're welcome at Apple Podcasts. He releases new episodes every Wednesday and Friday. He talks pro wrestling, MMA, all kinds of other stuff too. Very well spoken, funny guy. Love having him. Glad we could hook it up in Portland when we were there playing a great show at Dante's in Portland. And thanks to Chael for hooking it up and letting me use his studio to record this episode. And speaking of thank yous, thank you to everybody who came to see Fozzy in the first leg of the Judas Rising 2018 tour. We're taking a few days off so I could go snowboarding. We all need a little bit of a break. But in the first leg, Fozzy, Los Angeles at the Whiskey was amazing. Las Vegas at Counts Vapt was insane. And also Lubbock, Texas at Jake's back room. We had a great time there. But all the shows were fun. And we're going to continue the fun as we start up on March 27th in Milwaukee at the Turner Ballroom. March 28th, Chicago at the Bottom Lounge. March 29th, Grand Rapids at the Intersection. March 30th in Detroit at the Shelter. That's going to sell out very soon. March 31st in Dayton at the Rockstar Arena. That is sold out. April 2nd, Cleveland House of Blues. April 3rd, Pittsburgh at Jurgles. That is about to sell out. April 4th, Clifton Park, New York, upstate New York at the Upstate Concert Hall. April 5th, New York at the Gramercy. That's going to sell out. April 6th, Philly at the Foundry. That's going to sell out. April 7th, Portland, Maine at the Aura. And April 8th, Hampton Beach at Wally's. And remember, April 8th is WrestleMania Sunday. You can come see Fozzy play a matinee show. We're going to start at 5. We'll be done by 7. And then myself and the entire band are going to stay and watch WrestleMania. You can join us. Come watch WrestleMania with Chris Jericho. April 8th at Hampton Beach at Wally's. Get your tickets at FozzyRock.com. Come join us as well for the VIP meet and greet. It's one of the best of the business. We play a mini concert for you. We meet you, we greet you, we hang out, we have a good time, sign some stuff for you. We have a really, really cool experience. One of the best of the business. Go to FozzyRock.com to check that out. And go on to the Twitter at FozzyRock to read all the reviews of Fozzy's VIP experience. A lot of people saying it's the best they've ever encountered. We agree. Also, bringing the words of Jericho back to the UK in the spring, May 21st in Glasgow, May 22nd in Manchester, which is sold out. That's sold out in 7 hours. May 23rd in London. Still some standing room tickets available for that. Go get your tickets at insidetheropes.co.uk. Gonna have a great time telling some ridiculous stories and have a good time hanging out with all you guys. Lots of fun coming up. Also, as we have a huge announcement this week at Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea, we set sail October 27th, head all the way from Miami to the Bahamas. And remember, $150 holds your cabin. You can make a reservation for $150. We just announced that Corey Taylor will be on the cruise, the lead singer of Slipknot, lead singer of Stone Sour, Talk Is Jericho alumni 3 or 4 times. He will be on the cruise. Also, Noelle Foley will be on the cruise as well. She'll be hosting things. And not to mention, all of these people will be here. Jim Ross, Jerry the King Lawler, SoCal Val, Mick Foley, Ricky the Dragon, Steamboat, Rey Mysterio, Raven, the Keepin' It 100 crew, Beyond the Darkness, Colt Cabana, Marty DeRosa doing the Unprofessional Wrestling Show, Killing the Town will be there, Brad Williams, Ron Funches, Busted Open Radio, Corey Taylor, Fozzy, Phil Campbell, the Bastard Sons, King, The Stir, The Dave Spivak Project, The Darlings of Rock and Roll, The Cherry Bombs, Shoot to Thrill, the world's best female AC/DC cover band, Blizzard of Ozzy, the world's best Ozzy cover band, Noelle Foley will be there, and and, of course, the Ring of Honor presenting the Sea of Honor tournament aboard the ship. Matches happening on the cruise in the middle of the ocean. And the winner of the Sea of Honor tournament gets a Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Championship shot in the future. Kenny Omega will be there. Young Bucks will be in the tournament. Villain Marty Scurll, Briscoe Brothers, Dalton Castle, Frankie Kazarian, Adam Page, Christopher Daniels, Jay Lethal, Delirious, American Nightmare, Cody, don't call him Rhodes. They'll all be in the tournament. Cody's wife, Brandy, will be there. Women of Honor will be represented. So many more names to be announced. We're not stopping, man. We are not stopping until this cruise is sold out, and we're working on a cruise number two. So many great, 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 great names. Remember, anything that happens on this ship when you reserve your cabin is all-inclusive. It's all for free. So go to ChrisJerichoCruise.com and book your cabin now. All right, coming up on Friday, the 35th anniversary of one of my favorite movies, The Outsiders. Francis Ford Coppola's The Outsiders. Also happens to be Danny Boy O'Connor's favorite movie. He's from House of Pain. We met up when we went to the Curtis Brothers house, because Danny Boy's actually bought the house where the Curtis Brothers grew up in the movie Pony Boy, Soda, and Dairy. He lives there now. He actually he's starting up an Outsiders Museum. He's starting up a whole Outsiders resurgence based on his love of S.E. Hinton books. I love S.E. Hinton as well. 35 years of The Outsiders, one of my favorite movies of all time. So quotable. Dallas Winston, Matt Dillon. Oh, he goes to the drive-in and he's harassing Cherry Valance and her friend. She goes, "Why can't you just be nice?" He goes, "I'm never nice." I love that line. We'll do it for Johnny, man. We'll do it for Johnny. Very, very cool movie. One of my favorites of all time. Also, Danny Boy O'Connor's favorite movie from House of Pain. So we're going to talk all about that. But The Outsiders, 35th anniversary. Throwing a little curveball at you. I bet you never thought you'd hear anything about that. We're going to hear about all the props that Danny Boy's got, what he's still looking for, what the process has been like, and how you can check it out for yourself. We're celebrating the 35th anniversary of one of my favorite movies of all time. The Outsiders will be here on Friday, so check that out. In the meantime, and in between time, we will see you soon. Stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy. We'll be back on Friday with Talk is Jericho and The Outsiders. We'll see you then.